It's Friday, February 27th, 2015, and welcome to episode 174 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And Cindy, this time, this is our first episode without Mike, and I already miss him.
I know, it's going to be different.
Yeah, Mike has taken another job, and we always talk about security updates and security spotlight on Tech Talk for Teachers. And there were two or three items just recently in the news that I wanted to at least mention. And, you know, we always relied upon Mike to explain a little bit further. But a couple of big items in the news. One, Lenovo had added some adware to some of their consumer model laptops, which made them subject to what Mike would call a man-in-the-middle attack.
Right.
Which is basically kind of a hijacking of you go to a URL and it redirects you to a different site.
That you're just completely oblivious of even happening.
Yeah, with malicious intent oftentimes. So that was in the news, and it's kind of related. We talked last summer, I believe, about the go-to-fail with Apple certificates. They weren't being signed and things, and that's where you get in trouble. So that was one item security-wise in the news. And then the other one just this week, I saw where Gmail had a bug where their autocomplete feature was actually going out, and I guess you would, you know, type in a contact, and if you weren't paying attention, it would grab something, you know, completely different than probably what you were intending.
From your contacts from
the contact,
anything?
No, from the contact list.
Okay.
But, you know, in Gmail, many people have, hundreds of entries. So.
Hundreds and hundreds.
So I'll provide a link out there. There's a couple of articles out there, and I'm not sure if they've got that that one patched yet or not, but I guess moral of the story is make sure you always double check that, you know, who you're sending to.
Exactly.
Before you press that send button, because I guess there, you know, obviously could be some very, you know, very embarrassing things.
Right. Yeah, we've all learned our lessons from reply all and things like that.
It's like, where's that unsend button? Unsend.
Absolutely. So. Well, and then, you know, as we've always talked about, these things are constantly in the news.
Right.
And that we're seeing security things. We just had a conversation with a neighbor who was talking about, you know, the smart TVs and how they can access what's going on in your home.
That was another item in the news. Samsung had the continual listening mode where they were, like, listening for commands and things. And then I saw some things comparing, you know, that's the classic story, 1984, where you have the screen on the wall listening all the time. And so, you know, there's always things security and privacy-wise that we need to be aware of. So.
Right. And it's the things that the tech experts, you know, it's now appealing to everybody at every level.
Right.
Is
but
what's
with
really
those unintended
amazing.
Unintended consequences out there, too. So just wanted to mention that up front. If you're listening, Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. We miss you.
So we'll go ahead and get started here. I thought our first segment we might talk about some of our project updates. And the name of this episode is, Where Did February Go?
I have no clue.
So we'll get started. So here we go. In our first segment today, I thought we would talk about some of the project updates and things that are going on in February. And as mentioned, February is already a short month, but I cannot believe that it's over.
No, it is. It's gone by so quickly. And I don't feel like it seems like it's been busy work. It's been, you know, I don't have anything really big to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like I've been busy all the time.
Mine has been, I guess, scaling up. We're, you know, one of the huge projects that just continues to take more and more time here at the ITC is videos.
Yeah.
All of our students are required to go out and videotape themselves teaching, whether that be in practicum or their student teaching experience. And now as a capstone event with the EdTPA, they're required to submit a 15 or 20 minute video that's uninterrupted. You can't cut, you can't edit, and that's to be submitted for their licensure. And that's all being worked out and just helping a number of students do that. But I don't think people realize the time commitment. Again, you know, we've talked about this, doing it one or two off video, it's not such a big deal. But when you have, you know, 200, 300, 400 students doing it all at once in a concentrated month time.
Drawing on my English teacher background, it's, you know, assigning those term papers and the very long research projects and things, it seems like a great idea until you have to grade 25 of them and each one's 25 pages long.
Right. Yeah, I mean, can you just imagine the time commitment of 15, 20-minute video when somebody's sitting down?
So, yes.
So, you know, that's taken a lot of time this month and will continue throughout the semester. The other thing, you know, you mentioned the English thing. Do not wait to the last minute to do these projects. And, of course, students being students sometimes do.
Yeah.
And they
and
learn those lessons.
We as adults never do that,
no,
do we?
No, we've learned our lesson, right? So, I mean, it's, you know, just human nature to procrastinate right. and put some of those things off.
And sometimes they don't realize how labor-intensive those yeah. video projects are.
Yeah.
So it's a really good experience for them.
Yeah. The good news is, you know, the technology continues to get better. That's good news, bad news, because I was just helping a student a couple days ago, had recorded their lesson using the new iPhone 6. Mm-hmm. And it turned, I remember the numbers because I'm just... I suffer through these numbers. It was a 46-minute video, and it was 3.5 gigabytes in size. So that's a huge,
right.
huge file. So the first challenge was getting it off the iPhone so we could either put it on a PC and edit it in Movie Maker or a Mac and iMovie.
Is that because he chose a high-end?
It's a higher resolution, and I don't have an iPhone 6, so I couldn't look. But I did not see any settings when he was showing me that we could lower the resolution. That's some of the tricks that we do with our, you know, our checkout cameras. Because if you edit video and you're very high resolution, large file size, that's processing time.
Oh, my goodness.
That's higher quality, and it just ripples through the whole project.
And when it's necessary, that's great, but sometimes that is not necessary.
Right. But, yeah, we're not doing a blockbuster Star Wars or Star Trek movie or anything like that that we need, you know, 4K Ultra HD.
That's right.
With surround sound and all of that. So, you know, we've got some streamlined video flows that we're learning, and I've been meeting with several students, both as groups and classes, and then a lot of one-off individuals. But that does continue to be a challenge. And then, as I mentioned, just checking out equipment and turning it around for that number of students. We check out a camera. We strongly try getting it back within 24 hours because there's another student waiting on it for tomorrow.
Do the majority use their phones?
No.
No?
No. Only the recent models will be able to do this.
Okay.
And then the other problem is, like a lot of the iPhones are only 16 gigabytes in size. So if you are loaded up with apps or music or, you know, whatever, or videos, you know, whatever.
That's right.
It's limited in size and it's not expandable.
Right.
And that's where it gets you again.
I just bought a larger card for my phone.
I really like, you know, that little tablet I just bought. I bought a 64 gigabyte. It's a micro SD card, and I think I mentioned last time, it fit every one of our Tech Talk for Teachers podcast episodes and every one of our ITC YouTube. Mm-hmm. I just was looking for something to see. It's like, and lots of room to spare. I think it only took up like, you know, 8 or 10 gigabytes. I can't remember. So I've got a lot of room on there, so we're good for a while.
And I've started saving some documents on my phone. I created a Cindy's Doc folder and just some... you know, documentation I need for different meetings and appointments and things, and that I'm keeping in there now, like I do with the tablets and that.
Right.
So I'm really starting to rely more and more on my phone as a computer.
Yeah, and of course I use cloud storage too.
Yes.
But you're only as good as that internet connection, and both you and I live in a rural area, which it's sometimes non-existent. So you do have to plan ahead a little bit sometimes with that. So right in the middle of doing our Technology Enhanced Classroom series update. I think the last time I did that was in 2010, so it was definitely due for an update. And this is a series of videos out on YouTube that explains for our students and our faculty how to use our Technology Enhanced Classrooms. I think I've done 5 or 6 episodes, and I've got maybe 2 or 3 more that I would like to do, you know, showing about our technology-enhanced classrooms, how to connect a laptop, how to use the remote, how to use the video switch box, all of those questions that, you know, you get asked 100 times.
Exactly.
But trying to be a little bit more thorough in the
But the little things that will completely throw a teacher off her game or his game. I couldn't get the smart board, and we talked about one time, couldn't get the smart board to work, and luckily one of the teachers in my class recognized that it wasn't plugged in right. Somebody had just hit the cord and
The USB connection came.
Right. And that was all it was.
Yeah.
But I, you know, even as comfortable as I am with technology, for a second I went into panic mode thinking, okay.
Yeah, and that's something we put a great deal of stress on. If, you know, if an instructor comes down and has trouble with a smart board or whatever, I mean, I think we're really good about immediately getting up, because that's instructional time and I want to take care of that issue as quickly as possible, because you've got 20, 30, 40 students sitting there.
You lose your momentum.
Yeah, and as you say, throw your game off, you know, if you get rattled a little bit. But those are things that you learn as you become a veteran teacher.
Absolutely.
To adapt. Things are going to go wrong.
We can think on our feet. That's why I love doing professional development with teachers, because if something doesn't go right, they've all been there, done that.
Right.
And they are the
learning experience.
Greatest group to work with, because they're okay with you changing it on the fly.
Yeah. So that's going on. And then in the ITS world, in our Information Technology Services Department, we've got several projects. A couple of them wrapping up and a couple of them starting. You know, we switched over to Office 365 back in October for faculty staff, and we are in the very final efforts of migrating group email accounts. We did individuals, but we're trying to shut down that Zimbra server, or actually ITS is. And then Zythos is another project that's, I guess we're sunsetting. We're turning, that's a group file server to share files, you know, easily, which essentially OneDrive has kind of taken the role of that. And then the other big project that we're firing up is our VDI initiative. We've been running VDI with Windows 7 for 2-3 years now, but with the latest updates with our VMware servers, we can now go to Windows 8.1. So we volunteered for a pilot project to work some of the kinks out of setting up Windows 8.1 with our little terminal servers, which, instead of spending $1,000 or so on a desktop unit, we can buy like a little $150 terminal server. And so it's kind of back to the terminal mainframe days.
Right.
But the nice thing from a support role is, if we roll that out in a lab, I can update one image and it's good for all 30 of those terminals.
Nice.
Rather than like currently you have to go one-to-one-to-one. And it does takes a lot of time when you do some of the updates and things.
You know, one of the things I love about here at EIU is, especially ITS right now, and all of you guys that are spearheading this, you guys are letting us pilot some things, letting us try some things, and you're learning, and that makes us more comfortable to learn it as we go too.
Right. Well, it's definitely a changing world, and you know, as we've talked before, we're learning right there along with you, because this is a new experience for everyone.
It's exciting.
And then I guess on the last thing here, and then virtual conferences and presentations. Right now, currently going on up in Northern Illinois is our ICE conference. Again, I couldn't
it.
So I've been following some people on Twitter. You know, think you're going to mention something about hashtags a little bit later, but following along with the ICE15 hashtag, and you know, even though we often can't attend just because of workloads and things, we can still participate, you know, virtually, and kind of keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on out there. And then I've also had some opportunities to do some virtual presentations. I had an opportunity to work with a Kansas State class, an animal sciences class, and we did like a virtual video conference. And they were particularly interested in OneNote, so I just did a little OneNote question and answer session, and that worked out very, very well. We used the Zoom video conferencing application for that. Worked out very well. And then just earlier this week, there was a conference / presentation going on with a group of pre-service teachers over in Scotland. And the instructor opened up a OneNote notebook and gave editing rights. And we were able to provide some of our resources and things.
Even though it would have been really nice if you could have, you know, made that trip over to Scotland, wouldn't it?
I don't know about right now. I was thinking maybe going now to Florida, or maybe Australia, New Zealand area. I've got a lot of friends down there.
Someplace a little warmer.
A little warmer than right now. We should mention, this has just been a brutal winter.
Oh, February has been unbelievable.
What, 6 below, I think, this morning. And this is like the next to the last day in February, which is pretty unheard of for this
wind
area.
Wind chills in, you know,
20
below.
It's
been just brutal this February.
Right. Of course, I see my Canadian friends and then I shut up pretty
quick.
That's
right.
So.
Yeah, or Boston or, those folks.
I'm glad we don't have 12 feet of snow, too.
But, you know, here in central Illinois, we get snow and then within a 3 or 4 day period, it's gone.
It often melts.
We've had snow solid. We've been white for longer than I ever remember.
So, having coverage. So, hey, weather people,
work on
March is coming. We want to see some green here very soon. Like I said, it's been a pretty brutal winter for us. So, and then the other thing that, you know, I think more and more people are starting to become aware of OneNote. I'm a strong advocate of using OneNote for note-taking software, and we've started a little OneNote Buddies program, which is pretty informal. But every opportunity I get with students asking me about that, just organizing your life, organizing your classes, teaching note-taking skills, I'm finding, you know, just square one.
A lot of our students,
a lot of our students don't know how to take notes well.
Or to organize information. Mm-hmm. They write everything, and it's like, no, you don't have to write everything.
So the digital tools help, but if you're not competent in the analog world of being able to organize that, you have to organize it first before you can take advantage of the digital tools.
So. And it's such a great tool for visual and kinesthetic learners.
Yeah.
Because I'm a timeline gal, you know, and so when I can lay out information like that, so the cool thing about OneNote and things like that, it lets you organize your information
your way,
how your brain works.
Exactly. And I'm chronological too, so in fact I have a system that I'll put the date, so like 02/27/2015, I'll put today's date on whatever note page that I'm taking. That way if I do a search and it's like, oh, I did that presentation, you know, the last Friday in February, I can just do a quick search and it's right there.
Nice.
But yeah, I also find that, you know, everybody's a little bit different in the way that they think, and they have to do what works for them.
Absolutely.
Like, my system's not going to work for others. You have to internalize that yourself.
Yeah, make it your own. And then once you make it your own, then it'll work for you.
And that's part of the learning process.
It is. Well, on the conference note, we have our...
Yes, I know that big conference is coming up
TPS, EIU, and Illinois Council of Social Studies conference next Friday. And, you know, even though it's face-to-face conference and people attending, we are, you know, everybody wants this now. They want a depository for conference materials. So if there's a session they can't go to or couldn't get into, they can find those materials and download them or access them.
And are you providing that?
We are going to provide that,
okay,
yes.
Good.
And then any handouts, they don't have to take things home. They know where they can find them and all of that. And so that's going to be part of it. And then we also have a presenter that's going to have a Skype session with a Holocaust survivor from France.
Wow.
So, you know, the technology, even though it's not a technology conference, all of these things that are just every content area, it's just embedded woven throughout.
And I think to be successful, that's the way it needs to be. It's just invisible. It's there. We're using it in a support role. It's to support our teaching and learning.
And we're using it naturally. We're not having to think about it. It's not this big special occasion thing. It's just a part. And that's the awesome thing that, you know, when I first started this grant, very few teachers had projectors in their classrooms. Well, now that's not even something you talk about.
Yeah.
It's there and they use it constantly.
Yeah. Back to your notes and things for the conference, I also noticed that the ICE 2015 conference going on here, as I said, in Northern Illinois, they
is
have
that
a shared...
the Illinois Computing Educators?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. They also have a shared Google Doc out there where they're providing the resources with that. I just submitted a proposal. I don't know if it'll be accepted or not, but the Faculty Summer Institute in May at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, I submitted something there, and they're doing the same thing where they have the shared resources, you know, like a Dropbox or a Box.net or a OneDrive or a OneNote or a Google Doc. I mean, there's just a number of ways to share that out. And it's very, very valuable, again, especially for people that can't attend. Just because you can't attend, and there's so many teachers, it's like, how in the world? You know, as a teacher, people don't understand this, but if I took a day off, it's like I've got to work three times harder to take one day off.
Right.
And then I'm 3 days behind whenever I come back, you know, getting the substitute and notes and, you know, all the lesson plans and things together.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of the same thing here. You just lose so much valuable time. But at the same time, we're extremely interested in professional development and improving and finding the newest things out there. So that's where I really rely on, you know, Twitter and professional learning networks and things
and,
like that.
And because that was part of my problem this month, I was gone 2 weeks for meetings and things. And even though you're in contact electronically and you have files and that, it's still, you know, the you can't do everything. Mm-hmm. Or I can't
do everything. So, okay. So that's just, you know, a few of the projects going on. Like I said, February was a short month. I'm not sure where it went. But, you know, we're certainly integrating the technology into the courses. And it's the scaling up and things with the video projects is proving to be challenging. But we're overcoming some of those. And we're working on some new learning flows and workflows and trying to smooth that out. Just having that system up front.
Exactly.
So we're learning some things along the way. But, you know, like I said, February's been a short month.
But cool stuff.
My technology pick of the week is, guess what I'm going to say, Cindy?
What? I'm psychic. Probably something with note-taking.
That's it. OneNote. New developments in OneNote land this week.
You're converting me, Tom.
I'm working on it. As a teacher, as a student, as a learner, there's just so much power in the online digital notes. And then combine it with digital inking, and you've got me off on a whole different topic. But this week, just announced, hot off the press, is OneNote staff notebook creator for education. I think I have mentioned, if I haven't, I should have, part of Office 365, there is an app called OneNote Classroom Notebook Creator.
Yes.
Which allows your Office 365 administrator has to set this all up for you. But once it's set up, it allows a teacher to create a classroom notebook. Within that classroom notebook, it gives you three sections. It gives you a collaboration section, which everybody can contribute to online. It gives you a content area, which only you can add content as the teacher. And then it gives every individual student their own, quote unquote, semi-private notebook because it's shared back with the teacher.
Okay.
So each student can't see other students' notebooks, but the teacher can see every student notebook.
Nice.
So just think of the formative assessment possibilities with doing that. I can set up my content, put it in my content area. Students are free to copy and paste, you know, the content out of the teacher's, you know, teacher edition of the notebook and put it into their own private. So again, I'm going to use the term semi-private because the teacher can see these. The student, if they would like, they can make a separate private only to them notebook. But there's a lot of value in this collaboration piece going back and forth. Well, that was true for the classroom. So it was kind of set up as a semi-learning management system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, instead of handing out the handouts and things, you can distribute like one copy of your notes and then all the students, you know, can get it from there. The staff notebook is kind of a spinoff of that, except imagine, you know, in a school environment, you know, you've got the principal and you've got the teachers. You might have a science department and a math department. You could set up an individual notebook for, say, the math department, and then, you know, you would have a master administrator for this notebook, and then each staff member could have their own private notebook, but you could share the common curriculum out there and go back and forth. So it's kind of a more structured environment to give. Again, you could do this with, you know, like a shared Word online document or a Google Doc or something like that.
Right.
But you lose all the structure.
Okay.
That's, again, a selling point that I really like about OneNote is it provides that familiar three-ring binder. Here's a section. Yes. Here's a page. It makes sense to me. And it might not, you know, maybe OneNote's not the right answer. There's Evernote, some other note-taking apps.
That's one of the things that's hard for me. But it's like you go from Google Docs and then to, on campus, we use D2L.
And Desire to Learn.
And all of these different places that we're doing this, that there are these little tweaky things that are different between each one.
Right.
And that, and so that comfort, and of course, you know, we're all comfort with Microsoft Office products. And so the look is familiar, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, with the Desire to Learn, I find this is such a supplement to our Desire to Learn or D2L because it gives you the flexibility. You know, again, with students, they have their own OneDrive space so they can provide those documents.
Right.
If you, the instructor, want to share something out, I mean, you can just create it in your OneDrive account and then share it out with individual students or a group of students, however, I mean, you're in control of the way that it's shared. So I'm excited about this one. I don't know if we'll be able to install the OneNote staff notebook creator, but here in the ITC, I see it valuable for me and my student workers and things, just sharing out, you know, different things that we do. And, you know, every time we hire a student worker, we kind of have to go through a process
of orientation, right?
Getting everybody up to speed. So
everybody has access to all the, you know, everybody has access to schedules. Everybody has access to, you know, processes and things like that.
Yeah. But the collaboration space is another benefit, because you can go out there and multiple people. It's like, I have a question. I don't understand this type of thing. And it's kind of the old, well, if I answer it to that one student, only they know the answer. But if I answer it in a public collaborative space, everybody in the class benefits.
Because there's a good chance that a couple of other people have the same answer and or question and just don't want to ask.
Yeah. So that's the OneNote staff notebook. For education, I'll provide a link in the show notes to that. Okay, Cindy, what do you have?
Well, mine's a little bit of different type of topic that I was thinking about. You know, my language arts background, I'm always thinking about how literacy skills are built through what we do with technology and in the classroom. And I found a really neat blog post about hashtag how-tos. And hashtags fascinate me because they're everywhere. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You know, every commercial you see, hashtag this, hashtag, you know, and even some things they talk, you know, if you watch the Oscars, it was hashtag this, you know, and that.
It's kind of like QR codes went through that.
Exactly.
You know, that process fair, and they've kind of dwindled down a little bit. And I don't know if hashtags will or not, but they're as you say, they're ubiquitous across especially Twitter and Facebook. So.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, and the white dress, blue dress we talked about. And actually, they said, you know, the big trending, I think, yesterday was the llama chase that happened in Arizona. So llama, hashtag llama, and hashtag
that took
dress.
Over at the end of February, just to give the audience a little bit of background, if you're listening to this in the future, what in the world are they talking about? Llamas and dresses. The llama incident, there were a couple of llamas that got loose out in Arizona, and there was a chase, so that kind of preoccupied a lot of the
I
nation.
Think we
I
all
yesterday.
Needed that yesterday.
And then I'm still haven't figured out the, what do you call, blue dress, white dress.
There's a dress in it. To a lot of people, it looks white with gold trim. A lot of people, it looks blue
so
with
it's
black
like an
trim.
Optical illusion type thing.
It's all in perception. I mean, it's all in individual perception. Two people can look at the exact same monitor and see it differently. And so,
which is so fascinating to me as a teacher.
Science.
Because exactly. I was thinking, well, there's a lesson on light, you know, right there for a physics unit or something. But also for a teacher, we think that we can explain something like night and day. It's like black and white. How much clearer can we be for a particular, you know, concept or whatever it is? Yet students interpret that completely differently.
Absolutely. We each bring our own.
So I saw that go through my Twitter stream, and I saw a blue and black dress is what I saw. But I had no context of what it meant. I just saw it go by and went on.
Yeah, it's hilarious and how much, I mean, they said how many millions of times it's been viewed, looked at, and tweeted and everything else, and it's crazy. But so hashtags are everywhere right now. And one of the funny things I noticed one time is I had a friend on Facebook who was hashtagging her niece's name, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. It's this sweet little baby. Then I did the discover of hashtags in Twitter, and there were some people that had that name that were not someone that. So that started the wheels turning about multiple uses of the same hashtag because, you know, there are only so many words to go around. And
then also you have to worry about the bad guys because there's a number of education chats. Yes, there's a number of education chat hashtags out there. And if something becomes real popular, they'll essentially kind of spam, and sometimes with some very inappropriate material. Right. And as a digital citizen, if you come across that, please block them and report them. So, you know, Twitter or Facebook or whatever, can, you know, they're flagged to as inappropriate content.
Right. And so that brought me back to my language arts background with, you know, the whole thing was vocabulary and synonyms and keywords and things like that, and how it's important that if we're going to be using things like hashtags and technology, if we use Twitter with our students or any of those things, that we explain to them, choose your words wisely, but also don't limit yourself to just one thing that you know about a topic. Branch out and think about other uses and other applications and other ways that people could be hashtagging that topic. And, you know, so that goes into vocabulary development. and how important that is for students to see things from multiple perspectives and how to use those hashtags. And so, you know, I saw it was this really interesting blog post, and
we'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay. And it was basically just, how do I figure out which hashtag to use and set it up? How do I know what people are saying? How do I know what they're using so I can follow? And how do I know who's using the hashtag?
Right. And we also have to remember that, you know, we've been doing the social media things for a number of years now, but not all teachers have.
Right.
So we need to sometimes back up and, you know, kind of start from square one. So that's a good introductory article there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes back to your purpose. It's, you know, it's limited by your imagination and your purpose and your goals for learning. I mean, it's incredibly flexible. Whatever subject you are, you will find a use for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So it was just something neat I came across.
Okay, thank you. That wraps it up for episode 174 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on our Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom
and Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.